This episode is brought to you by Shopify. Forget the frustration of picking commerce platforms when you switch your business to Shopify, the global commerce platform that supercharges your selling wherever you sell. With Shopify, you'll harness the same intuitive features, trusted apps, and powerful analytics used by the world's leading brands. Sign up today for your $1 per month trial period at shopify.com/tech, all lowercase. That's shopify.com/tech.
Welcome back to Redefine You, a conversation for well-being, where we have open and honest conversations with friends of mine in the industry to explore their ownership to self and mental well-being journey. As when one shares their vulnerability in such a way, we're encouraged to look within. I'm your host, Haley Hasselhoff. My guest today is a communications professional turned model. She has an amazing story to share about her personal journey, her mental health activism, why she feels sharing her personal story is so important, and how she came to this incredible moment in her life where she just made her rookie debut as Sports Illustrated swimsuit model. I can't wait to talk to her. So welcome to the show, Tanae White. Hi, honey.
Hi, thank you for having me, Haley.
Oh, I'm so excited to have this conversation with you. How exciting for you as well. Rookie debut. Look at that.
I know. I can't believe it. Still doesn't even seem real.
Amazing. Well, before we start, I'm just going to say some of the topics we discussed today, they may be a bit triggering. So if you're in need to speak to a crisis counselor, remember that you can text home to 741-741, or you can head over to projecthealthyminds.com for resources ready to hear from you. Now, the beginning of every show that we do, I always have to ask my guest, if you were to check in with yourself right here, right now, what would Tanae find?
Check in which way?
Check in with your emotional, mental well-being. You know, what would you find today? Where are you at today? How are you feeling?
If I'm being very honest, I'm very stressed out because in a few days I'm moving to New York City. So that whole preparation for moving, you know, New York City has been on my mind for the last 2.5 years now. And I sacrificed so much. I moved in with my parents. That's where I'm at right now. I'm in Annapolis, Maryland. Like, there's all these bells and whistles happening. But hopefully by the end of this weekend, I will be much more zen.
That's okay. Moving is stressful for everyone. And I don't think people really like amplify it enough. I have moved to so many different countries and different things. I just moved back from the UK and did 20 suitcases on a ship back to LA. And it was just mayhem. And I was like, when is this going to end? I'm so ready just to get back to life. But you just talked about New York. You talked about Minneapolis. You grew up in the suburbs in Connecticut. And what was that necessarily like for you?
Yeah, I can't lie. I had a great childhood. It was amazing. Like, when you think of your typical 90s, you know, child, like playing with scooters in the neighborhood cul-de-sac and chasing dogs and running through sprinklers, like, I had that entire experience. But I will say there was also sort of a double-edged sword with that experience because I was the token Black kid growing up. And so it was a lot of me feeling like I didn't fit in. So it was sort of like living, you know, this like great childhood life, but then also like deep down sort of not feeling really comfortable with myself, just feeling a bit of like sometimes an outcast and not really sure on, you know, trying to figure out basically where I fit in the town. And for some, I guess, some background, I was actually born in Baltimore. And I was one of plenty of people of color. And so when I moved to Connecticut when I was 5, it was a huge culture shock for me simply because the only white people I had ever met were my kindergarten teachers, flat out. And so when I went and it was like, I'm the only person of color, me and my family are like one of the only Black families in town who are of color, let alone Black. It definitely was a shock for me transitioning.
Do you think that that was something that you sort of understood at that age? Or do you think kind of growing a bit older, you look back and you go like, no, this is actually how I felt and what I was really dealing with back in those days?
That's such a great question. I think I understood what was happening. Like, oh, this is a different state. These are different people. That this is how it is here. Mm. But then also I, as an adult, I look back and wish that my parents had helped me for that transition, like getting me into therapy or helping me to maybe get into programs where I did see people like myself. Because when you just have that stark contrast, you just sort of, it's either you dive into it or you just sort of shell up and like don't know what to do with yourself. And I was definitely the shelling up type of person.
Do you feel like there was sort of a moment when you look back that goes like that was a defining moment for you to start to look at things a bit differently when you did transition over there? And like you said, I think that you know, one of the things is probably the hardest thing is talking to your family about it, because you probably didn't know necessarily how to be able to verbalize everything that was going on, all the changes, and being so young, you know, being 5 years old and being put into a whole different culture shock. I think your mindset was probably like, whoa, I guess this is what life is now. And I have to just move forward from it. And, you know, you aren't really taught that at such a young age or know the vocabulary as to how to necessarily indulge that in a conversation. So for you to even be able to look back, I mean, you should applaud yourself and be like, wow, for myself to be put into that situation and the way that I handled it is a beautiful, beautiful way.
Thank you. I guess I could applaud myself. I mean, I survived. I was a depressed kid. I mean, that's an achievement in itself.
It is, though.
Yes. I think growing up, I definitely did not know how to verbalize it. I thought maybe I was overreacting or even thinking too hard, because I am a person who does think too hard. And it was always very hard for me to sort of express those feelings with my parents, because in their head, them being from the Bronx and Baltimore, success to them looks like being able to live in a nice middle-class suburban neighborhood and be safe and not worry about food on the table or, you know, the electricity bill or stuff like that. So for them, I don't think they really understood that outside of tangible things to make you feel comfortable and comforted, there was also that emotional aspect. And because I was such an introverted, very energetic, but introverted kid, I really didn't know how to share that with others. I didn't know where to turn. I couldn't really be to my friends because, again, they didn't really understand that experience. But then also to my family, because they're thinking, hey, we're living the good life simply because, you know, we made it. Hey. And then it was hard to find someone to confide into. So I literally folded into myself. I would write in my diary. I still have all my diaries as a kid.
Oh, and you can just,
sometimes I'll take a peek at it and I will look back and read some of the words I wrote when I was like 12, 13. And you can just hear how much I was hurting. I didn't know who to share it with. So it was just all on me.
Girl, I get you. I get you. Like, that brought almost tears in my eyes. Cause I mean, I've done the same. I've looked back at my diaries and been like, whoa, you know, and you look back and you're like, thank you for holding on.
Yes.
Thank you for holding on, you know, because it gets better. And you aren't taught that at a very young age when you have all those emotions that it gets better. And so you think that that's it. And I even said to my boyfriend the other day, which is like, I read a piece of a message to him where it was like, I thought I was never going to have a boyfriend. I blamed it all on my body and all these things. And then I was like, I like read it and cried. And then I like ran downstairs. I was like, I have to read you this. And he's like,
this is so relatable. You had no idea.
I was like, I have to read you this. I was like, I was sitting on a plane going from one place to the next. And, you know, I thought I was never going to find love. And now look at me, I'm madly in love.
Hi, everybody. I'm Katie Segal.
And I'm Kurt Sutter.
And welcome to our new podcast called PI, People, Influences, and Experiences.
Yes, it's sort of the get to know you at a deeper level, the who, what, when, where, and why you are, rather than what it is you do.
Absolutely. We're not going to talk too much about what people do. We just want to know about their families, where they come from, you know, what shapes their parenting if they have kids, what shapes their marriages if they're married. We just want to be really nosy. We want to get in there.
A deep dive into nature and nurture.
And we started it because there are a lot of people that we don't know that we are curious about.
Right. And I have no friends. So for me, it's, you know,
trying to get them out of the house.
Listen to it on whatever you listen to. podcasts on.
Yeah, podcast, homecast.
Your podcasting apparatus. Watching on the YouTube.
He's aging himself.
One of the things that just popped out to me, though, that I really loved as well, that I do kind of want to tap into, is being introverted but still energetic, because that is something that I think people don't discuss enough. And that's, for me, the way that I sort of explained my social anxiety as a teenager, because I was always in the room. I was always the vivacious, like, hey, girl. But I was actually really introverted inside, dealing with my emotions. And so I would be really curious for you to sort of dive in a little bit more of what that experience was like for you.
Yeah, I completely relate to what you're saying. I was a ball of energy. Yeah. I was literally doing backflips off of the staircase so much that my parents signed me up for gymnastics. That's how I got into gymnastics and then cheerleading and so on. That was how.
God, I love it.
There was not a day I wasn't doing something physically active. I even went as far as to take my mom's Buns of Steel's workout videos, like the tapes, the old school tapes. And I would like bring a chair into the family room, stick the tape into the TV player, and I would do it for fun. Like, I'm working out for fun. It was very strange. My parents always thought, like, are you okay? Like, don't you want to like go outside and do something else? Like, no,
I
like
this. Need to get my body moving.
Right. But on that same breath though, I think about times where I didn't want to socialize. I would see all the kids running around outside and I would want to stay home. I would rather play video games in the basement and like not have to deal with anyone at all today. Cause I definitely, looking back, had a lot of social anxiety because I felt so uncomfortable looking different that it made me, it oftentimes made it hard for me to open up or be as extroverted as I wanted to be, simply because I wasn't sure always how people were going to take me. And I remember that this one specific moment in second grade, I believe we were either playing outside or waiting for the bus stop. And one of the kids who lived a few houses down from me called me either Blackie or Darkie or something like that. And I thought to myself, yeah, I am Black, you know, but then looking back, it's like, no, that that was racism. That wasn't okay. And needless to say, that kid was like a mean kid. He was like a few years older and like always wanted to bully the younger kids who were having fun. He was just like a rain on everyone's parade. But there were moments like that where I just definitely felt uncomfortable, or even when I was in Girl Scouts, loved it to death, when we would have to go and sell cookies, Girl Scout cookies, house to house, door to door. And my parents were like, you know, have me do it by myself, you know, lug my little box of cookies
Girl
around.
Girl Scout cute, I get it.
Yes, I would feel nervous to ring the doorbell because I wasn't sure how the person opening the door would react to the fact that there's a little Black girl on your stoop. Like, are you going to accept my cookies or are you going to deny them? And if you deny them, is it because you don't want them or is it because of maybe a racial moment? Like, I don't know. So it was definitely a lot of me always trying to overprocess every situation and what could happen and just sort of bracing myself for what could possibly happen.
Which is horrific to hear, you know?
Yeah.
It is. It's really, really horrific to hear. And it just makes you want to go and give you a huge hug and say, the love is in you. The love is you, you know? But I think at that age, I'm sure that there was a lot going on inside your head that you didn't know how to verbalize and you didn't know how to be able to talk to somebody else. So what did you do then? I mean, did you just allow it to all stay up here and to have those really impactful moments happen to you every time you were just trying to be a kid and just trying to do, you know, things that made you happy, like Girl Scouts, you know, there's it that brought you joy. But of course, in the back of your mind, you were always so concerned about maybe what other people's perception of you may have been, you know, what who did you go to? Were you able to go to anybody?
I had one close friend, and this was late middle school, high school, Besnick. And he also was in a similar situation to me because he is Albanian. But at the time, he had not come out to his family as being gay. And so he was also sort of burrowing those feelings of him just wanting to feel accepted and be his freest self. he was the only person I ever told about my like really sad bouts of depression and how I, you know, didn't find value in my life and how I often considered not being here. But outside of him, the way that I sort of got through those days were just diving into sports, diving into academics, and writing and reading. And I was on TikTok the other day, and this woman talked about how kids who read books, like read a lot of books as a child, were actually just using a form of disassociation to avoid the realities of their life. And I was like, that's me. I would literally read till like 3 a.m. like every night. And if I wasn't doing that, I was writing in my diary. If I wasn't doing that, I was playing video games, building like my third sim house of the day. Like it was always something that I could just take my mind off of how I was really feeling.
I love that. Your third sim house of the day. You're bringing me blast from the past over here.
Yes.
I'm just going to say, I'm so happy that you at least had one person that you go to and that you could connect with and that you felt safe to be able to share your thoughts with. And to have that sort of awareness is very profound. It is, you know, to kind of be able to look back and say, this is what I'm feeling. And I don't feel like I have any value in my life. And I believe that I'm dealing with depression. And even though you spoke to one person, I think, as you know, at least being able to indulge it outside of your head and putting it to somebody else's kind of point of view allows you to sort of go, I'm okay and a little bit better than maybe I thought, because I'm at least able to verbalize it in some capacity.
Right.
Do you feel like that was, you know, your sort of saving grace in those moments when you may have had suicide ideation, where you were able to, you know, indulge in somebody else and say, you know, this is where I met, and how do I, you know, develop from this? I don't know, but I just feel like this is my truth and I want to speak my truth, even though I may not know why this is developing the way that it is.
Yeah, I can admit that I'm a very stubborn person. I'm a Taurus to a T. And so when I have, you know, my mind set on something, it is very hard to convince me otherwise. So if my mind is set on the fact that I am worthless, you can't tell me, oh, well, you just got an A in advanced English and, you know, you just broke a school record, you know, in track and field and you did this, because at the end of the day, that doesn't matter to me. What matters is the fact that I don't feel good still. And so my best friend at the time, Besnik, was also just as stubborn and was like, no, bitch, you are, you know, amazing. Like, I love you. Like, let's go for a walk. He literally lives like two neighborhoods down from me. He will walk all the way to my house, have me take a walk. Cause this is, you know, before we could have cars and stuff, we couldn't drive.
Yeah, yeah.
And we would just take a night stroll around the neighborhood, stars, crickets, all this stuff. It'd be beautiful. And it was definitely a sigh of relief. I definitely want to say that he is a significant part of the reason I am still here today, because had I not been able to have at least some type of outlet, I really want to say that the chances of me having survived high school would have been very slim.
I know that quite well. And I think, you know, one of the biggest things that we're not taught, or we don't tell the younger generation, that it's okay to feel and that it's okay to not be okay all of the time. And I think sometimes what can happen is we get so bottled up with our emotions and not know how to verbalize them or to express them in a specific way, right?
Yeah.
And I think in your case, it's the same, or what I'm hearing, right? I'm not going to speak for yourself, but I'm saying what I'm hearing is that it seems like you had a lot of emotions going on inside you. And thankfully you had that one person that you could speak to. But if we had more people out there speaking about their struggles and not having it be a fearful place to speak about it, maybe it would make it a more accepting space for so many. Because you are so powerful in speaking so vulnerably about your story, if you could speak to yourself as, you know, the younger person that you were in that specific situation, what would you say to her? And what would you want to be able to say would have helped support her through those years?
Yeah, I would have told myself, all the fieriness that you write in those diaries and in your journals, say them out loud. You're not going to get suspended from school. You're not going to get grounded. People need to hear how you truly feel. We don't want to see the mask. We want to see the real you. And I really also wish I could have spoken to a good friend of mine, Steve, who committed suicide when we were in our sophomore year of high school. And I did not know that he was suffering. And obviously no one knew I was suffering. And so I really wish that if I had, and I don't take blame for what happened, of course, but I always wonder if I had been more vocal about how I was truly feeling, that maybe that could have helped his journey as well, or maybe switch the trajectory of his life.
I think it's really hard to see that you were silently suffering while then you kind of identify with somebody else who was silently suffering as well and didn't have the answers into how to verbalize what you were feeling at that point in your life. Do you feel like that was sort of a trigger or maybe a flare up for you when he did pass?
It wasn't a trigger. I honestly didn't know how to handle it. Because for the longest, I always thought it was just me. Like, it's me, something's wrong with me. I didn't think that those levels of sadness were something that others could, I guess, get to. And then also considering the fact that all my friends around me were happy and like funny, like he was the most hilarious kid ever. I just had no idea that a person who can be so funny can also be so sad or hurting so much. And now as an adult, I immediately pick up on funny people or people who are almost a little too expressive of their personality. I immediately, like I'm such a person who, I like to sit back and watch people. I'm an observer, right? And so when I'm, you know, meeting you for the first time and like, I see you like sort of doing a lot, I immediately think, something is going on. Like something is wrong. Like it doesn't necessarily have to be anything big, but like they may be overcompensating for something. And so I think a takeaway from him that I had was that, like, just sort of observe people a little more and not always take what you're seeing at face value, because there's a lot more layers behind it. And then even if we're like going to like branch out into like a different topic, I feel like that same theme applies to social media today, because we share our highlight reel. We always think everyone's good. Oh, she just got married or engaged. Like she's great. Or, oh, they just got a puppy. They're great. But like a picture does not summarize the book. And it's, I live it, you know, being a model, you sort of have to live this life where it's like, everything's great. I'm athletic. I am, you know, happy. But then you know, you turn off the ring light, you close the camera and you're crying yourself to sleep because you're really sad because either your boyfriend broke up with you or like you're still going through depression from something else. I always try to, you know, I try a lot to be better at just sort of thinking about different aspects of a person's life and not necessarily what they're presenting to you. And I feel like a lot of people don't do that enough. And with like all the hate we see on social media, it's like people just want to spew hate for no reason, but it's like how give people some grace simply because you truly do not know what they are going through. They're only showing you what they want you to see. But what about the other parts of their life that you haven't even, you know, learned about yet?
It's what I, you know, one of the biggest things that I keep thinking of is like, you know, through pain and suffering comes beauty and comes connection. And I think through a lot of what you have experienced in your childhood that brought you to your high school years, that brought you to where you are now, it seems a lot of it has connected a self-awareness to your own self and an empathy towards others. Yeah. And one of the most beautiful things I think I acknowledge about my own self is one of the things, this a very similar thing. I've been through a lot in my life and I wouldn't change it because I feel like it has brought me to be much more empathetic and self-aware, but also aware of others and their surroundings. And I think that's one of the biggest beauties of life is that we should be aware of our surroundings and what other people may be dealing with, because a passing of somebody having a hard day, you can't judge them on that because you don't know what's going on behind the scenes if they're having a little bit of an attitude towards you. And so if you start to change your mentality about, instead of getting upset by somebody's infliction of a word that they may have presented at you, maybe take a step back and hit it with kindness, because you don't know what just happened, a text message that may have just come in, a whole shift that just happened within their lives. So it's a beautiful thing that you've taken so much from what you've experienced and have experienced through your surroundings and the people that you've loved and lost, to be able to be where you are now and say that this is how I want to rewrite my story and how I look at life and how I look at the people around me, to help encourage them to feel confident in who they are. So it's, I mean, it's gorgeous. And I just think it's beautiful. I know that there was an experience that kind of brought you to your guidance counselor, and I wanted to know if you'd be comfortable with sort of talking about that.
Yes. I have two parts of this story, actually. And one part I actually have not shared publicly yet. So this will be the first time. So it was about around my junior year of high school, winter time. And it was the darkest moment in my life to this day. Darkest moment. Those months between, let's say, after Thanksgiving to, like, let's say early March, darkest days of my life. And the thoughts of taking my own life had become so persistent that one day I couldn't even focus in class. I had told myself, I'm going to, you know, take my life tonight. And I did not want to do it. There was like this little glimmer of hope in the pit of my stomach saying, like, no, you're meant for so much more. This can't be it. Mm-hmm. But all the other thoughts were saying, like, it's over, you know, like, how am I going to do it? Let me think, what's in the house. Like, it was just bad. Mm-hmm. And so I remember being in my advanced history class, bursting out in tears randomly. The teacher asked if I wanted to go to the guidance counselor. I said, yes. I went to the counselor and I told her my plans. And she asked me if I was okay to continue with school. And I said, yes. And she sort of let me cool down. And then she was like, you know, I have to tell your parents about this. Right. And I was like, yes. And so when I went home that night, my parents sat me down and they were very concerned. They asked if I was depressed. I admitted to it. They told me, you know, okay, well, like, we want you to get better. And like, we can tell just by the way you behave around the house that like, you're very sad, you know, all of this stuff. We love you. Mm-hmm. We care for you, all of that. What you would unfortunately expect from a Black family and the Black community is we don't really talk about mental health the way we should. And so after that conversation I had with my parents, never heard about it again. Mm. Never got therapy, nothing. And I like to say that I was touched by an angel, because about a year after that is when I finally was able to not rid myself, but have those thoughts, those terrible thoughts subside. Mm. And I know it sounds so cliche, but it just, one day I woke up, I felt like, every day I woke up, I felt so heavy. I felt like this cloud in my head, in my life, in my heart. It could be a sunny day, but it felt cloudy to me. I woke up, it felt great. The next day I woke up, I felt great again. And I remember writing my diary. I feel happy today. And I don't know why. I'm going to see how long this lasts. And it kept going for about a month where I just felt so light, so good. And I remember writing my diary like this, there's no other way to explain this. This must have been an act of God. He must have been hearing my cries. I'm so sorry, God, forever, you know, cursing you, all of this stuff. And from then on, I made a vow to myself to try and help others, so that they would never feel that sadness that I had been feeling as a young adult, or young teenager. Fast forward though, skipping all the other details, this past COVID, this pandemic has obviously been challenging for a lot of us. And me as a 29-year-old, this is what, 12, 13 years after the moment I just described to you, I was finally able to tell my parents how I truly felt, how I felt like they had let me down. They didn't get me the help I needed and all of this stuff. And it was an explosive conversation, but it did happen. and they received it very well, more than I had always had this big fear of telling them how I really felt, like, you did wrong, you know, but I did. And the first thing my mom said was, I didn't know you were suicidal. And I was like, what do you mean? I told my guidance counselor, she said she was going to tell you. And she was like, she said, told us you were depressed, but she never mentioned anything of suicide.
What?
And so then, of course, that puts me in a position where I'm thinking I've had this resentment towards my parents for all of these years, over
I'm
a decade.
I'm going to call that school up right now.
Exactly.
Excuse me. Where is she? I'm finding her. Is she crazy? Yes.
Girl, I could go on for days. But in that moment, I really had to think about how I've been feeling all this time. And then almost going back to what we were just talking about, had I been more vocal, maybe we would have been able to address that detail before. Like, why did it have to wait?
I would just say this, though. It happened the way that it happened. Don't ever put yourself down for the way that you went about things, because at the end of the day, it's brought you to where you are now. And even though it's taken this much time to get you to that conversation with your parents, at least you got to the conversation with your parents. You can pat yourself on the back, girl. You've been through a lot. And I think so often we want to look back and say, coulda, woulda, shoulda, right?
Right.
But we've got to cut that out, because it is what it is. And we have to live in that acceptance of what our past is. And we have to live in the acceptance of what our inner child is telling us too, to bring us into the present. But at least your inner child's giving you this sense of confidence now to say, this is what I dealt with. This is how I've been feeling. And now I want to use this pain to good. And I want to have a more open rapport with you on everything moving forward. The diary page that you have that says that you just got out of the cloud, like, the first thing that went to my mind was like, you need to rip that out and you need to hang that up somewhere, because that is an ornament of what you've been through. And to look back at that little girl's journey and say, I'm going to hug you every single day and remind you that it does get better, because we still go through challenging moments, right? We all do. And especially, I think that if you've gone through challenging moments in your childhood or gone through challenging moments in your teenage years, it can kind of surprise you as an adult, because sometimes you think that you've sort of developed and you've grown this, like, badge of honor and you know where you are. And then all of a sudden the sadness comes back and you're like, wait, I thought that I've dealt with all of this. But I even know for myself, like, as I've gotten older, I'm 28 now, so close to you. I've been hit with inner child stuff. I'm like, hey, I thought I dealt with you before. Where'd you come from? You know? But then that's okay too. You just now have to figure out in your period of life right now, what does that look like for you? And how do you use your toolbox of all the things that have worked before? So going into that, do you feel like, you know, you are sort of dealing with inner child things as you get older? Do you feel like there are pieces of you that you're still working through, especially having that conversation with your family? I'm sure that that brought up different emotions that you've had to sort of identify and work through in a positive way as well, to be honest.
Yeah, I do actually. I'm dating, and I identify when I close up in, I guess, harbor my own feelings instead of expressing them. And what I love about the person who I'm dating is the fact that he has a similar background to me. And so, and he's also an extreme empath. So I'm usually the one who is empathetic and I point out other people's faults or triggers. Yeah. But now it is a point where he'll be like, hey, like, no, let's talk about this. Wait a minute. I can tell that you're actually not, you're saying you're okay, you understand, but I can tell you're not. can you please not close up and just talk to me? And I'm like, you're right. So I definitely feel like not even closing up, but just sort of trying to save face and, like, keep that cute, pretty face. Like, that's something I'm still working through. And then also just asking for help. I'm very prideful and I don't like to ask others for help. Like, even today, I had to put my car in the shop and my mom was like, well, you know, we can, you know, pick you up. Like, I can drive you to the shop and pick you up. You don't have to worry about doing it another day. And it sounds so simple to just be like, hey, would you be able to? But for me, it's so hard. It's like grinding my teeth because I just rather do things myself. Mm-hmm. I rather not burden you with anything that's tangible, as well as my emotions. Like, I just rather help you, but don't ask to help me because it's going to make me uncomfortable.
Yeah. Well, I mean, and what do you do in those instances now, though? Like, do you feel like you found a toolbox that really works for you? I know obviously you said touched by an angel, and I do want to go back to that. Is that something that you're very much, do you feel like your religious relationship is something that really is a driving force within your toolbox?
100%. I wouldn't say I'm religious, but I definitely am spiritual. Mm. And I attend Elevation Church's online services every Sunday. And I watch them over and over and over and over. Mm. And it's crazy how, like, sometimes when I'm at my lowest, I will go back and watch like an old sermon.
Yeah.
And somehow just, I will literally just scroll Russian roulette and pick one. And somehow that one video or podcast, cause they're everywhere, will be speaking to me. It's like, how did you know?
Yeah. Yeah.
You know, I was feeling like this. And so I always make it a point in myself to, anytime I am starting to feel that downfall, I immediately go for some words of wisdom, upliftment. And I feel that even if you are not a spiritual person per se, just whether you're speaking to a friend or, you know, a family member, just some way to release and also to hear positivity, like sort of, it's like nourishment for your mind. Just hearing good stuff really helps to, I guess it helps with the way you're feeling as well. And it may not, like, I feel like a lot of times people aren't religious because the Bible is just so hard, you know, back in the day to apply to now. Like, okay, like, you know, David and Goliath, well, we don't have giants running around, so what are we going to do? Like, I don't understand, but I feel like with Elevation, at least, they really help to translate that and interpret into a way that's more modern. Mm. And so anyways, going back to what I was talking about, like anyone who is hurting, I really feel like if they really just take the leap and open up and confess to their friends or to a parent or to a sibling how they're feeling, the likelihood of you ever hearing a negative reaction back is the furthest thing that's going to happen. That's the furthest thing from reality. Usually what happens is the first thing they say is, what can I do to help? Or, and what I think is beautiful is, I've been feeling the same way too.
Yeah.
And then you have this bond. Yeah. And then next thing you know, you're crying and hugging each other, tears of happiness, because you feel this weight lift off of your shoulders. So I feel like my form of therapy day to day is just releasing and speaking and sharing. But I think also things like, you know, finding people or projects who can, you know, share wisdom with you really does help.
I think finding your purpose towards your pain definitely allows you to sit more freely in your confusion towards it. And I think that's exactly what has happened for you. As you were touched by an angel, you felt like you were validated in that moment to be able to take ownership for the pain that you were surfacing, and then being able to put something beautiful towards it, right? And so I think no matter what you are feeling in this point in time, if you start to like focus on your purpose towards something, you start to validate who you are, and then you take that ownership back again. And that's all it is, right? It's finding the ownership within your own self and your own journey, and blocking out all of your surroundings that are around you telling you to go otherwise because of society standards, right? So you're like, who am I? What means something to me? How can I validate myself, whether I'm feeling good or feeling bad? You know, you ventured off into college after all you did, all this goodness, and then you started to become the A student, you were an athlete. I mean, how did that sort of induce, you know, your college years? I can only imagine. I didn't go to college, so I didn't have a college experience, but I have heard it's very stressful.
That's quite okay.
So, so if you
trust me, you didn't miss out on too much.
So, I mean, did you put a lot of pressure on yourself to be a straight A student and an athlete? And I just want to know from your point of view as well, because we keep speaking off of how your experience can sort of indulge into maybe what needs to be fixed within the community to help people feel like they're more comfortable at knowing that not alone. Being an athlete and being somebody who probably just wanted to always win the game, Do you feel like you had a community around you that was supporting you through that journey? Or do you feel like the pressure was always on to be perfect?
Yeah. So I did track and field. I was a long jumper my freshman year of college. And then I quit halfway through my sophomore year because of terrible injuries that I just could not heal from. But when I tell you that when you have a team, whether it be high school or college or even like a club team, teams really feel like family. Yeah. Like when we were a Division II school, I went to Southern Connecticut State University before I transferred to the University of Maryland, and our track and field program was one of the top in the region. And so we were working out all the time. We were together all the time. We would get breakfast and lunch and dinner all together. There was nothing that we didn't really do together. So I really felt at home. I felt accepted. Everyone had their own quirk, their yeah. own unique personality. And it was a beautiful, it was like a hodgepodge of just amazing people. Yeah. And I feel like from an athlete's perspective in college, there's no option for you to fail or not do good. The athletic program sets you up for success. So you have all your classes at 8 a.m. to prepare for your afternoon workout. And then in the evening time, you have required study hall. So like there's no, oh, I forgot, or oh, I didn't have time. Like, no, you have designated time to study and, you know, do everything that you need to do. And I really loved that experience simply because being an athlete in college, you really have this structured type of feel. So no matter what, you have someone to go to, whether it be your coaches, your fellow teammate, and then also the school's programs as well. And I think me naturally being a person who always wanted to excel, I thrived in that type of environment. I loved it so much. And it definitely was a hard transition when I had to finally retire. I had really bad knee problems, which is something that's not good when you're jumping. but I would say for anyone who is in sports, whether it be from a collegiate level or even a high school level or a local level, do it. Even as an adult, I always think about how I went to join a boxing club because that's something I really love doing at the University of Maryland. And I really feel like, especially if you're a person who is, I guess, more of a loner like myself, or maybe a little more introverted, throwing yourself into a sport in a club really helps you to make new friends fast. So there's always options. And like we were talking about before, you're never alone. Like yeah. if it's hard for you to make friends, there's a way for you to do it. If it's hard for you to open up, there's a way for you to do it. There's always a way.
Do you feel like you or maybe the peers around you felt like their worth was sort of defined by your performance though?
I felt that way from a academic perspective, just because it was sort of drilled into me by my parents growing up, like straight A's, don't bring home anything lower than a B. College is the goal, so make sure you do well. But when it came to sport was sort of like a combination of my athleticism and my passion together. And so I never really felt pressure to, I guess, be perfect, but the drive was there. The goal was there. If I wanted a scholarship, then obviously I have to do well. So I always wanted to, you know, be healthy and be my fittest. But I think the more of that pressure definitely came from the academic standpoint. And it's really hard when, let's say you're not good at science and you study so hard for a biology exam and you fail and you don't know how, and you've studied for hours and hours and hours. Those moments definitely are a blow to the ego and to the pride, and definitely contributed to some of my sadness. But I think that from an athletic perspective, there's so much joy that's wrapped around it. It's sort of almost hard to feel any bad pressure, unless it's not a sport that you want to be in.
Movement, I think, is a really big tool in just being able to connect back to your being, and is a great thing to keep in anybody's toolbox. So I think it sounds like it kind of was like it leveled you out in some ways, because you were like, if I don't get straight A's, And then you're like, well, I got to go to work out now. So you just kind of like worked it off. You know, you were like, I've got it. So it was a, it was kind of a, probably a blessing in disguise. And I can only imagine what then happened after your knee injuries and so forth. But I do want to tap into really quickly, because I am curious. You then went off to kind of use your degree and became a social media specialist, which obviously led into your dreams of becoming a model. But yes. I really want to know, getting into an industry, like being a social media specialist, you know, what did you find? Like, what was one of the biggest findings you found that kind of related back into your own sense of self or sense of self-worth? You know, how did it negatively affect you, or how did it positively affect you? I'd be curious, because as somebody who, you know, we all use social media in some form, but I just mean, like, to somebody to know that that is, you are learning the ins and the outs of just how it all works, but also playing into, I think, a lot of the craziness that can come with social media. It's curious for me.
I didn't even know the career existed when I started like diving into it. And it's funny, because in high school, my parents found out I had a Facebook, and they didn't like that, because at the time I was like, oh no, that's where creeps try and, you know, prey on children. So I was grounded for like 2 months. So fast forward, like, I'm doing it as a full-time career. It's just hilarious to me.
Yeah.
But I think that social media, I didn't expect it to be the way it is today. When I was starting into it, MySpace was sort of just subsiding. Facebook was taking over, and Twitter was just coming about. And so we didn't, Instagram was just sort of like this artsy type of app. Like, some people had it, some people didn't. The times were so much different than the way they are now. But I think from a strategic standpoint, and from my background, it being my corporate career for several years, I see how much social media plays into the day-to-day life of just regular human beings. When we think of what we want to share from a corporate perspective, we want to share our business goals, our highlights, our achievements, what our employees are doing, why you want to work with us. But from a personal perspective, is what are the cool things I'm doing? I went to the movies today, or I went to the beach today, and this photo I took is Instagrammable, so I want to share it. If it's not Instagrammable, I'm not going to share it. So it's more, I feel like a social media from a personal perspective is more contrived. And that sort of goes back to what we were talking about, of people just showing a highlight reel, because it's not real. But I think knowing both aspects of social media and its power, I've learned to have a love-hate relationship with it, because from a business perspective, I love it. Like, I worked for the U.S. Department of Veterans Affairs. I was managing their social media pages. I saw how the information we shared could help business owners get large contracts and succeed. But from a personal perspective, I see how, you know, face tuning yourself to death and putting filters on stuff and only showing bits and pieces of the reality of what you went through that day can negatively affect yourself, but then also give other people the wrong impression and idea of your life. So I definitely have a love-hate relationship with social media. But it's something that I think it's an art form of communication that I enjoy so much. So much, in fact, that I started my own social media marketing agency, where I help small businesses who are looking for more strategic ways to, you know, communicate their services. And so it's been really fulfilling for me to do that and sort of see businesses be able to meet their business goals through art and communication combined.
Yeah, I think this past year definitely, of course, opened up so many more doors for people to lend their voices and to connect to communities worldwide, because we all were dealing with a collective anxiety. So it allowed for us to sort of open up our hearts a bit more to, you know, connecting to one another, even if they're that niche or that you know, community necessarily didn't connect before. We've all now connected in a bigger and beautiful way. I want to tap in, obviously, to your debut, your Sports Illustrated Rookie, which I'm so excited about. I know a couple of the other sports girls, and you guys are just wonderful, wonderful people. And I know a lot of the audition process can sometimes be about learning about the girl, not just about the beauty. And I think that's one of the most beautiful things that sports has sort of done over the past course of their years, is really being able to amplify the beauty that inspiring other girls through their own stories is so impactful. What was your audition process necessarily like when you were in the room? Because I know that you had to reapply. So it was a pretty, you know, lengthy audition process. And I'm so proud of you for sticking in it, because I know it can be discouraging at times, but you've done it and you're here and you should be so proud of yourself. So tell me what happened in your last audition that you think just sort of clicked?
You know, I don't know. I really can't say that I know. The first time around, I was literally working an office job, right? I saw a flyer for Sports Illustrated Swimsuit, and just a couple weeks before, I was telling a friend of mine a deep, dark secret. Hey, I always wanted to be a Sports Illustrated model, but I have no idea how. And then weeks come by, you see the flyer, and I'm like, this has got to be a call from God. Like, yes. And so I flew down to Miami. Mind you, I had already submitted an audition tape via video, and they accepted my tape, and they were getting thousands and thousands and thousands, and they accepted me. And I was like, okay, awesome. I made it through the first part. I fly down, and it's at the W Hotel, and all you see is dozens and dozens and dozens and dozens of stunning women waiting to interview with the editorial team and the supermodels who were there. Somehow, out of the 10,000 applications that they received, online and in person, I made it to the top 16. And when I did that, with my little to no modeling experience, I actually had the opportunity to be interviewed by Kate Upton. And I was just like freaking out, like, day made. If I don't make it any further than this, like, I will have, you know, been so satisfied with myself. And unfortunately, I didn't make it to the top six, which grants you a spot in the magazine. And it was definitely a hard blow. I was so sad, because I knew in my heart of hearts that I was going to make it. I told all my friends and family, like, I'm in the magazine this year, blah, 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 and I didn't. And then it was like, oh, my ego is bruised. But I decided ultimately that I wanted to give it one last shot, because if I made it that far with no experience, what could happen if, you know, over this next year, I put myself into modeling, I start doing photo shoots, sort of gear myself up for the next opportunity. And what if I can make it all the way? And I did. I made it all the way. We shot for my swim search shoot in Turks and Caicos, which was gorgeous. Like, I didn't even know water was that blue, could be that blue. And then this last year, as the winner of the search, I shot in Sacramento due to COVID. You know, we couldn't go abroad for my rookie shoot. And it's, I don't want to give away the theme of the shoot, but let's just say it's going to be so different than what you would picture for Sports Illustrated.
I'm so excited. And I think it's an amazing thing, and you should be so proud of yourself. And it just showcases that if you believe in yourself enough, things will happen. And sometimes a door needs to shut to be able to guide you into where the right door is going to open at the right time. I do want to talk a little bit about this past year. Like you said, like somebody of my own self, I mean, I had the same situation, you know, shooting different things during COVID and trying to rework our lives and our careers around it. But did you experience anxiety this past year? What was sort of your relationship with yourself, and just also your relationship really with your body doing a shoot like this during a time where I think a lot of us kind of skyrocketed in our ideas of our self-image and our body image? And this must have been a beautiful shoot for you to be able to do during this time to kind of help validate who you are and what means something to you. And just kind of curiosity of what this last year sort of felt like for you.
Yeah. To put it simply, 2020 felt like a kick in the gut, because this was the year that was supposed to, or that was the year that was supposed to kick off my new career. At the end of 2019, I had quit my corporate job officially. I saved up all this money getting ready to gear up and, you know, just throw myself into modeling and whatever was meant to happen for me. And then 5 months later, COVID hits and everything comes to a screeching halt. So needless to say, I was very bitter at the situation. And anxiety for me was certainly at an all-time high, because I didn't know what the future looked like, because financially my funds were depleting. I wasn't making more money because the modeling industry was at a standstill. And I'm living at my parents' house. My parents and my little brother are driving me crazy. like, I feel like we were all going a little stir crazy, just being cooped in the house and not knowing what to do next. And then on top of that, I went through a breakup. So it was a lot. 2020 was a lot for me, but I think that the photo shoot, I must admit, the rookie shoot came at such a bad time. It was literally just weeks after my breakup, but also the perfect time too, because it helped me to push myself out of the bed, stop feeling sorry for yourself, put a smile on, and let's do this thing that you have been dreaming of for years. This is the moment. There's no feeling sad for yourself. This is the moment. This is what you earned. Don't let any man or any pandemic get in the way of that. Embrace every moment. So I really tried my hardest to. I documented a lot behind the scenes of like, oh, today's the day. Here I am in hair and makeup. I just wanted to soak in as much as I could. And I think that the art, I think you'll be able to see in my eyes how I was feeling, but I think the art that was created with the photographer also can show the beauty of life. And I really feel like SI made it a mission of theirs to show life in all forms through shooting from coast to coast. So you had girls shooting on the East Coast, the West Coast, and Florida, Jersey. I think what they're doing this year is very beautiful and really speaks to what we are going through with 2020 as a whole. But I would say, summarizing all of that up, that 2020 was the biggest disaster in my life, but also much needed, because I left that year coming out very strong and also more outspoken, especially with the events that took place in June. That was tremendous for me, because for me as a Black woman, I started to see people who I thought were my allies as opposite. And if I'm being very honest, I even had to end business partnerships because of situations like that. But that just sort of reinforced me to speak louder for myself and for others. And, especially those who are either downtrodden or those who are, I guess usually just not in a place where they can speak for themselves. So as much as 2020 hurt, there were highlights for sure. And I think it was a year that for all of us, we had to learn. And so as much as I would like to redo 2020, I also wouldn't take it back, simply because the experiences that I did have to go through to get where I am right now, I wouldn't take that back. I love where I'm at right now as a person.
Well, I love where you're at right now as a person. And I think that it's awesome that you are so outspoken and that you are using your voice for purpose and trying to make a change by telling your story. And I think it's really important to amplify that, you know, it is a very fearful thing to come out and speak about your mental health, especially at the beginning of your modeling career. So for myself, being in this industry 10 plus years, to hear your story and knowing that you've taken that plunge at the beginning of your career to say, this is who I am, this is what I've struggled with, and this is what I want to project with the brands that I work with. It's a beautiful, beautiful, beautiful space to be. And you should be ever so proud of yourself. And I know that behind the scenes, it can be troubling and challenging, you know, telling your story, especially publicly. I've been there, trust, you know, but it keep in, because this is what makes you real, authentic, and it makes your purpose scream louder than where you thought you could be, you know? And I think that you're in a beautiful space.
We are
the real Brady Bros.
Brady Brothers from the TV show Brady Bunch. I'm Barry Williams.
And I'm Christopher Knight.
I played Greg. And who were you again?
I played Peter.
We've decided that we're going to do a podcast around episodes of the Brady Bunch. We're going to use it as a prism to look back to our experience doing the show and why the Brady Bunch is still popular.
Have a sunshine day.
We are the real Brady Bros.
We're going to close this episode off by just tapping into a couple things that make you you. So as we spoke about before, we talked a lot about building your personalized toolbox. And I kind of just want to know, you know, what in your emotional journey lately have you used during a challenging moment or a flare up? Like, what was the last thing that you did if you had a challenging moment?
I run. Exercise is still so much a part of my life. Anytime I'm feeling down or even stressed out like I was today, I immediately dedicate myself, if it's not that evening, then the next day, to running. Run at least a mile, do a little core workout if I want to, but at least run. And God forbid I don't want to run, then I'll take a walk. But I feel like releasing those endorphins is so important when you want to get out of a funk.
Definitely. And then if you could sum up your mental well-being journey in one word without any shame, what would that be?
That's such a good question. Oh, okay. A good word would be unexpected. Am I allowed to use that word?
Of course. That's a great word, unexpected, because I think that allows for more opportunities. You know what I mean? It just goes that it's okay that it's coming in, and that's totally perfectly fine. Lastly, I'm just going to say, what are the three biggest lessons you've learned in your life? Now, those could be words, feelings, sayings, seriously, whatever authentically comes to your mind. Mm-hmm. And no right or wrong answer.
Three things. First would be just breathe. Second would be talk nicely to yourself. Mm-hmm. And third would be it gets better.
I love it. I love it. I love it. I thank you so much for coming on, sharing your vulnerability, your heart, your soul, and all of the above. I know that it can be challenging, but I know that you know that when you allow yourself to speak vulnerably in this type of space, it allows others to know that they're never alone. So we're very thankful that you've come on to share your story and your truth today. And if anyone would like to connect with Tanae White, you can find her on our socials at Tanae Dubs. That's cute. I love that. And thank you, honey. So if you're looking to continue the conversation around living an unapologetically authentic lifestyle, then this podcast is just for you. Our goal is to build a community in which you feel empowered to celebrate you by hearing inspiring stories of ownership to self. To always remember to lead with the three M's, that's mindfulness, movement, and mental engagement. You've got this, and we're here to support you along the way. So be sure to subscribe and download so you don't miss an episode. And it's okay to not be okay in your journey to become grounded in the power of you.
This has been a Stage 29 podcast production. The podcast is executive produced by Haley Hasselhoff, Patty Ciano, LaFern Cusack, and Stephanie Kaysen. Our audio editors are Jackson Ruff and Jonathan DeMatti. Callie Keltz is the social media producer. And a special thanks to the rest of our podcast crew, Rwani Horenigay, William Cusack, Lisa Clark, Katie Brown, and Morgan Kaler.
This podcast has been produced by Stage 29 Productions for entertainment purposes only. The contents of this podcast does not constitute medical or professional advice, do not reflect the opinions of this company, any of its parent companies, affiliates, subsidiaries, promotional sponsors, or advertising agencies. The views expressed by the host and the guests are their own, and their appearance on the program does not imply an endorsement of them or an entity they represent. For more information, please go to stage29.tv.